For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson. Welcome to the Friday News Feedbag, a little something that happens here every Friday on our Discovery News podcast. Joining us, as always, Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Ribas. Fellas.
Hello.
Hey, Will.
How's it going?
Oh, good.
Another great week, I bet?
Oh, yeah. Terrific.
Yeah. All right, well, good. Every Friday, James and Jorge bring us their three favorite stories of the week. We then leave it up to you, our loyal listeners, to call us or email us with the story you like the most, and it can be for whatever reason. Just be sure to tell us why. The reporter whose story gets the most votes wins, so that's coming up. All new stories in just a few minutes. And James and Jorge, what's the score right now between you guys?
Jorge is up by one.
Yeah, I think this is the 20th episode, so I think it's 10-9, right?
Yep.
All right. It's really been neck and neck. It's almost getting a little boring. I liked it when Jorge was really far ahead and James was coming back.
Thanks, Will.
I also like that.
A little more drama. So first up, let's review last week's stories, or actually I'll just tell you who won. We'll tell you, first of all, that we got a lot of calls and a lot of emails. We appreciate it. A lot of fun thoughts from our listeners and some strange thoughts as well. We got a few votes for the food additive story. I know the cooked ham one got a few votes. Ultrasound about the punctured lung, that got a few. And here are a few phone calls we got as well.
Yeah, hi, my name is James from Columbia, Maryland, and I'm casting my vote for the ultrasound lung sealing technology. But as soon as they were talking about it, my first image was of Dr. McCoy in the sick bay healing Captain Kirk, making him feel all better. And anything that gets us closer to Ray Bradbury-type technology will always get my vote.
Hey, guys. This is Will from New Paltz, New York, and it was a tough one this week, guys, but I'm going to have to go with James's UK cooked ham story because, well, to be honest with you, I've got some ham here and I really wish it could last another couple of days, but, ooh, doesn't smell too good. So, James, I love the story of the UK cooked ham.
All right, so there you have it, a few of our loyal feedback listeners. However, the winner by far was the hot ice story.
Oh, really?
That's James, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
The hot ice.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Recap that for us, James. It's just simply that they're making...
They're using ice to coat this like diamond surface that they use in things like prosthetics and that sort of thing. It creates this natural lubricant for that. But the thing is that the ice can stay ice even in really high temperatures to create that lubrication.
Right, and people were excited by that idea. So, again, that makes the score now tied up again.
I would give him points for remembering what his story was.
Yeah, I was about to say that was unfair of me to just quiz him on that because I, of course, can't remember.
You did a great job.
Oh, thank you. I try to internalize all my stories.
Well, and for our listeners who want to vote on this week's stories, we'll tell you how to in just a few minutes. We have an email and also a phone number, so stay tuned. You guys ready to jump into this week's stories?
Yep.
All right,
I'm sure
you've got some great ones lined up. Jorge, you want to start it off?
Sure.
All right.
Okay.
Jorge, before you get started, can I say something?
Bring it.
Nice.
Oh, wait. Wait, you said bring it?
I was going to say bring it, and then you said it, but that's still
we'll both have brought it, I guess.
All right.
Okay, so my first story this week is a new system that would help aircraft avoid turbulence. And that's probably, you know, my 10th least favorite thing about flying is turbulence, followed by long lines and poor customer service and everything else you have to deal with.
And the ozone in the cabin.
Oh, that's right, and the ozone in the cabin.
And didn't you have a problem with sharing the armrest?
Yeah.
Basically,
there's not anything I actually like about flying.
But
turbulence definitely tops the list. And I guess according to some of the
I thought you said it was the 10th thing you don't like.
Well, it's like the 10th thing, but
it's a long list.
Hundreds of things.
But then it doesn't top the list. Anyway, go ahead.
According to the FAA, there are more than 1,000 minor turbulence-related injuries on commercial aircraft annually. So it's not even just like something that's inconvenient, but actually people get injured. And of course, airlines lose millions of dollars every year to turbulence because of injury claims, delays, and aircraft damage. So this new system would allow aircraft to earlier identify where turbulence is occurring. Right now, when a plane is flying and it's heading towards a storm, and if there's turbulence, regulations will say that the airline should move out of the way of the storm. And this could mean just more delays that we have to deal with. But this new computer, which is called the NEXRAD Turbulence Detection Algorithm, is actually a mathematical method developed by scientists from the National Center of Atmospheric Research, would allow for pilots in real time to determine where turbulence is occurring. And they do this, they use radar measurements to create a three-dimensional mosaic where the turbulence is occurring. They do this using the National Weather Service's network of Doppler radars. And basically, so now you would be able to capture where turbulence and storms. Now you would be able to capture where turbulence and storms by peering into the clouds and analyzing the distribution of winds. So you might be in a storm and there might be turbulence in just small areas of that storm, but instead of circumventing the whole storm to get to your destination, you can actually fly through the storm and avoid the little pockets of turbulence that are in the storm.
The plane just sort of like weaves around all the...
Yeah, and they'll be able to detect it. But whereas before, you would just kind of avoid the whole storm.
I like that.
It's kind of like a hockey player.
I like avoiding the whole storm.
But it would be kind of neat to fly through the storm, have like lightning strike through the...
I'm wondering, like lightning, you know, aren't there other things about flying through storms that might be dangerous other than just turbulence?
It doesn't say anything like that. I mean, I imagine that flying through lightning probably isn't something that you want to do.
Will, it's just turbulence.
Well, that's a question I'd like to pose to our pilots in the audience.
Oh, that'd be a great question.
We'll see if we have any.
But they've been testing this on United Airlines commercial flights for the last couple summers, and using this system, they've been able to detect moderate or greater turbulence more than 80% of the time, and now they're hoping that they can actually get that number up to close to 100%.
Cool. All right. James, take it over to you for your first story of the week.
Okay. My first story is in the October issue of the Journal of Consumer Research, and they're looking at the effectiveness of this new confusion-based sales technique. It's called Disrupt, Then Reframe. And what it is the salesperson will initially confuse you in some way about whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're thinking about buying. So the example they give in the study they did is they'd say like 100 cents for a candy bar, or 300 cents to join a student interest group, or 7,500 cents for a tuition increase. And what they found is that the consumer then is so focused on trying to understand what it is that's being said that they need what's called cognitive closure. They need to understand that, what it is that's being said. So while they're focused on that, they freeze their judgment on the sort of questions that they would normally ask. They don't pursue additional information to make a decision on to buy it. All they want is to understand what it is. And so by the person selling the stuff throwing out this confusing thing and then reframing it and saying, you know, oh, it's not 100 cents, it's think of it as a dollar, then the person understands, okay, it's just a dollar, and is more likely then to close the deal
because you're happy about understanding what was
right.
going on in the
because at that
place.
Point all you want to do is just know what the heck is being said.
I'd kind of like to start using this just to get my way in sort of, you know, everyday activities.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how exactly I'd do that.
It's like how car dealers distract you by telling you how many like cup holders the car has.
Okay. So confuse your customer.
Yeah, and I hope I've ironically confused listeners and then re-explained it better. That story.
No, you've sold your story. Good
yeah,
job.
Let's see if it works.
Yeah. Jorge, second story.
All right, so my second story comes out of the University of Manchester, where a new study says that early man may have struggled to run at even half the speed of modern man, and that's because the study proposes that early humans may have lacked an Achilles tendon, which, you know, as modern chimps and gorillas do, which I didn't even know that they lack that tendon. But obviously without the Achilles, which acts like a spring, I guess, when we're running to absorb energy, we wouldn't run as fast as we do now. And they say that the efficient running would have been essential to give our ancestors the ability to move from like a eating, you know, roots and leaves to familiar hunting activities, to chasing down, prehistoric gazelles or whatever, and probably also escaping some predators, you know, saber-toothed cats.
Right, that's what I was just going to ask. Did humans and saber-tooths live at the same time?
They did.
So,
you know? So they were being chased down.
How bummed were the saber-tooths when that happened?
When they were gone?
No, when all of a sudden they're like this prey that they could basically like just walk next to for a while. And then
when all early humans could do is speed walk away from a...
Now all of a sudden they're like actually running.
Right, right.
So slowly but surely we developed this Achilles tendon.
Right, and it's just a matter of the study is trying to figure out when exactly that happened, because according to models and the data that they have, they think that as early as 3.5 million years ago, our ancestors were able to walk as efficiently as we do today. But when we actually develop the ability to run as fast as we do today, which admittedly is quite varied from person to person.
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, I run as fast as early man.
It says here that early man did prefer to walk a little slower because they had shorter legs.
And they didn't have as much to do.
Right.
I like that. Preferred to walk. Like they had a choice.
Right.
Yeah, we prefer just to mosey about.
Yeah, they just didn't have as much, you know, as much to do on their list of things to do, you know.
It must have been so frustrating to be early, man.
I don't know, you know, I think they had a good time.
All right, is that it, Jorge?
Yeah.
Okay, James, your second story of the week.
My second story has to do with chimpanzees and how wild male chimpanzees have been observed stealing food and using that food to win over the opposite sex. This is in the September 12th issue of PLOS One, the Public Library of Science. And it was this observation took place in the West African village of Bassau in the Republic of Guinea. And what they found was that these male chimps would go on crop raids from farms and grab things like papaya and sort of, I guess, exotic fruit from, you know, within the wild chimpanzee community and bring it back and basically use it to lure the most wanted, the most desired female chimpanzees that of a reproductive age and sort of woo them out to the periphery of the community where they could get exclusive mating access. And in return for this food, the females then gave the males sex and grooming. They groomed the males more. And they found that the males that had this food got more attention even than the alpha male.
Of course. You got the food. Yeah.
So they bestow gifts upon them and receive gifts in return.
Yeah, I guess that's like chimp bling.
It's like us, basically.
They are saying that this provides further insights into the evolutionary basis of human food sharing. So that it's been proposed that men in hunter-gatherer societies would acquire large and risky-to-obtain food for social strategizing and also to garner attention.
Look at what I stole.
Those are like the James Deans of the...
Yeah, they're like teenagers.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just
rebelling?
Not to offend our teenage listeners, of which we're
chimpanzees are all punks.
All right, Jorge, let's take it back over to you for your third and final story. So this is it, man.
My third and final story is...
Until next week. I mean, this
right.
is, yeah.
This is your last
well,
ever.
Well,
what is it?
A chimpanzee will be replacing Jorge.
And he could do just as good of a job.
Yeah, he's great.
And perhaps better.
He brought me some food.
the chimpanzee would bring you guys food. I don't bring you guys food. Okay, so my third and final story is, as they describe in this, a major technological breakthrough, and that's easy to remove chewing gum. A company from the University of Bristol called Revolmer has completed the development of a new gum called Clean Gum, which can be easily removed from shoes, clothes, pavements, and hair. And preliminary results also indicate that the gum will degrade naturally in water. And they completed initial street it's kind of funny. They completed initial street trials, which they called the street trials, on literally streets where they would, stick gum to the street. And what they found is the leading commercial gums remain stuck to the pavements 3 out of 4 times. And in all their tests, the clean gum was removed within 24 hours by natural events. So I guess rain or people walking on top of it just basically was environmentally degradable.
Just like dissolves.
Yeah.
Is gum the stuff that sits in your guts for like 20 years or is that red meat?
7 years.
Is it seven?
See,
yeah.
I think that might be an old wise tale.
Oh, no, it's true. No,
But I do know that gum sticks to, the underside of seats at movie theaters.
It
and,
does.
You know, on the pavements when you walk, pretty much anywhere, table, anywhere.
Well, and I've always heard that it's not good for our bird population because if they eat gum, sometimes their beaks get stuck.
Together. Did you say that the gum was dissolved in water?
It dissolves... Here, and I know what you're going to ask. You're going to say, why doesn't it dissolve in our mouths when we're chewing it?
Yeah, that is what I was going to ask.
And then it's just not even gum. Then it's just like some sticky stuff that ends up dissolving.
It's the shortest lasting gum you can buy.
Yeah, because like I can chew gum. I've chewed gum. I think my record is like 5 or 6 hours on the same. I don't know. I've never timed it, but for a long time, right?
Sometimes.
Are you one of those kids that would like stick it behind their ear and like save it for later that day?
No.
The teacher made you take it out?
Maybe. No.
That is very true, though, with gum. Sometimes I find as a pretty avid gum chewer, I'll find it. I've been chewing it for an alarming amount of time.
Right.
Although 5 or 6 hours, I've never.
I don't know if that was true or not. It might be. I don't know. Nobody knows.
They hope to launch this product, they said, in 2008. So maybe they'll continue testing it to see if it doesn't degrade in our mouths while we're chewing it. And they also have to come up with a flashier name than clean gum. I mean, if you ever, like, walk on the streets, like, in downtown, like, a city, and you just look down at the sidewalk, all those little, like, black spots on the, is that all gum?
Yeah.
That's just an amazing amount of gum that just falls on the
There's
ground.
Also, I'm not sure what city this is, or whether it's in multiple places, there's things like the gum tree. Have you ever heard about these, where people
no.
go and, like, it's like a tradition to put gum on the tree? It's kind of amazing.
Absolutely disgusting.
Well, yeah.
But, I mean, amazing, but also disgusting. But who throws gum just, like, on the street? Like, I'm walking on the sidewalk, and I just, like, let the gum fall out of my mouth right in the middle of the sidewalk?
Well, maybe they're surprised and it falls out.
You're right.
There's a lot of people being surprised.
There's a lot of people that are still littering, guys.
That's true.
You spit the gum out, yeah.
If any of our feedback listeners...
Are litterers.
Are litterers.
Unsubscribe.
Please call in.
Call in.
Yeah, you don't get a vote.
All right, James.
You're a feedback felon.
Let's take it back to James for his third and final story.
All right. Well, speaking of trying to market clean gum, my last story is in the October issue of the Journal of Consumer Research. And what it talks about is how researchers have found that certain vowel sounds affect our perceptions of products. What they did is look at vowel sounds that are made with the tongue forward in the mouth. So such as the letter I in the word mill. So go ahead, try it.
Mill.
Right. And then they contrasted that with back vowel sounds, which are sounds that are made with the tongue further back in the mouth, such as the A sound in mall.
Aw.
And what they found was that the front vowel sounds conveyed very fast, sharp, small characteristics, while the back vowel sounds conveyed, like, large, slow, dull characteristics. So, like, a whale would be like the back vowel sound, and the front vowel sound would be like a cheetah. So what they found was that they made up these fictitious brand names and paired them with things like knives and convertibles and SUVs and hammers. And what they found was that participants preferred the front vowel sounds with products that were like the convertible or the knife by a 2-to-1 margin, and that the words with the back vowel sounds they preferred with things like the SUV and the hammer. And they also found that the U sound in the word putrid generally has a negative meaning across the board. You know, the idea is to get like if you have a physically big or slow product and create a name that uses that back vowel sound, that it, you know, sort of creates that synergy.
Right. Synergy, that's like right out of an advertising meeting.
Should we consider renaming the feedback based on these findings?
I don't know, Friday. It depends on, well, you know what, it's all in the perception of the listeners. If they think it's fast or slow.
It's definitely slow.
It kind of depends.
it definitely depends as well.
All right. Interesting. All right. Well, that it, James?
Yep.
Okay, guys. Great stories as always. And I want to remind our listeners that you are invited to email us or give us a call. Our phone number is 888-890-6339. And you'll be prompted by the incredible phone host to... leave a message and tell us your favorite story and why it was your favorite story. Or you can email us at pod_cast@discovery.com. Tell us what story you liked the most and why. James and Jorge, you guys want to recap real quick for us what they were?
Sure.
James, take it away.
Okay, yeah. My first story was confusing sales techniques. My second one was male chimpanzees stealing food to woo the ladies. And my third one was that vowel sounds affect our perceptions of products.
Okay. When are they going to talk about consonants? Do consonants matter as
they
well?
They don't get into that.
All right, just vowels. Okay. Jorge, what were your three stories?
Okay, my three stories were a new system that would help aircraft avoid turbulence. My second story was about early man not being able to run as fast as we do now. And my third and final story was about a technological breakthrough of nonstick chewing gum.
All right. Well, nice variety this week, actually. Some good stories, nothing too depressing. And you're invited once again to vote for James or Jorge. They're tied up right now, and you can help one of them break away. And we'll see what happens next week. All right, guys?
Yep.
Sounds great, Will.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Thanks, you too.
Again, Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Ribas. Talk to you again next week on The Feedback. For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson.